This is one I wrote for you guys called Shades of Love. It was well after midnight when Gemma Mancini prowled the museum. The lighting was low, an aid to the security guards who patrolled the galleries, but Gemma could have found her way in the dark. There were motion sensors, heat sensors, and pressure-sensitive plates near some of the more valuable displays. None of them were tripped by Gemma. There were cameras, of course, but Gemma was never caught on any of the feeds. The place was quiet, the stillness only disturbed by the rubber-soled footsteps of either Murray Solomon or Diane Snell, the two guards on duty. As for Gemma, she made no sound. Normally, she preferred to wander the museum while it was filled with patrons and staff, each person a fascinating glimpse into contemporary culture. But tonight, she was restless. It had been 3 days since Charlie had come to visit her, and she feared the worst. Gemma made her way to a gallery filled with abstract expressionist pieces. At first, the pieces had confused and even nauseated her. So much chaos, like staring into a maelstrom. She had actually been afraid some of the paintings would swallow her whole. Now she regarded number 15, painted by Jackson Pollock in 1950. She had come to appreciate the interplay of color and negative space, thanks largely to museum tours where she had eavesdropped on various curators, professors, and art aficionados. She sat on a bench and regarded the Pollock for a long time. She had learned that he had died in 1956 in a car wreck. Over the years, Gemma had hoped she might meet the artist, but he never entered the museum. In truth, the only artists she had seen were those who supervised the hanging of their work, or students eager to sketch and learn from the paintings, drawings, and sculptures that made up her world. Gemma had died on April 14, 1510, 2 days before her 20th birthday. A victim of the sweating sickness, she had modeled for Vittorio Coretti, a little-known but talented painter who had been influenced by the works of Raphael. Gemma had loved Coretti and hoped he might find her in death, but she never saw him again. She thought it might be because her remains were buried in the village of Fiesole, while he had been buried in a family crypt in Florence. Gemma had been bound to the confines of the churchyard for almost 20 years when a most remarkable thing occurred. Coretti had loved Gemma's Titian-colored red hair and had used some of the strands to make brushes. Just before her death, he had finished a portrait of Gemma he called his masterwork. The painting was called Ragazza con una ciotola di fici, or Girl with a Bowl of Figs. In the painting, she is dressed in robes of silk, the blue and gold of the sumptuous fabric, offsetting the beauty of her flawless pale skin, her golden-colored eyes, and her fiery tresses. She sits in a courtyard on a stone bench, a fig tree in the background. At her side is a bowl of figs, and she holds one. A bite has been taken out of the fig, and she has a slight smile as she regards the viewer with her velvety prize. The painting had gone to the home of Coretti's patron, Salvatore Medici of Florence. After Medici's death, the painting was bequeathed to a cousin in France. When the painting moved, Gemma felt compelled to follow it. Over the century, the painting moved many times, each time pulling Gemma with it. She had finally realized that the painting must contain some strands of her hair. This, coupled with her love for Coretti and his work, had allowed her to escape the dreary graveyard of Fiesole and travel the world. Eventually, the painting made its way to the Los Angeles County Museum of Art in 1965, and that became Gemma's new home. Gemma liked living in the museum, if a ghost can be described as living anywhere. She had learned English in her travels, as well as French, Spanish, Portuguese, Arabic, Russian, and Japanese, and the constant influx of visitors to the museum allowed her to keep current with fashion, slang, and current events. Though surrounded by people most every day, she was lonely. People could neither see nor hear her. Oh, some registered her presence on an almost subliminal level, but no one tried to talk to her. No one acknowledged her presence. Then, on a Saturday in 1972, Charlie Ames came to the museum. He wandered aimlessly, looking but not really seeing. Charlie was 19 and a sophomore at UCLA. He'd come to the museum to work on an assignment for an art history class, a class that he, as a business major, was beginning to think was a waste of his time. Then he saw Coretti's painting and stopped. He stared at her image. Gemma was nearby and watched him. He was handsome enough, tall and lean with jet black hair that was a bit unruly. She loved the blue of his eyes, like that of a spring day in Florence, but mostly she liked the way her painting held him transfixed. Charlie sat down on a nearby bench and looked at the painting. He stayed for over an hour. Eventually, he went to the gift shop, hoping they might have a print of the painting or at least a postcard. Sadly, none was available. Charlie returned each weekend and then began coming to the museum during the week after his classes. Sometime he would be accompanied by friends, and he would extol the virtues of her painting. His friends agreed it was beautiful, that the girl portrayed was beautiful, but it was clear they did not share his passion. Gemma would follow Charlie and his friends as they toured the museum or sat with cups of coffee in the cafe. Here they would discuss their plans and dreams, their anxiety about tests or girls that they desired. She learned that Charlie seemed particularly unlucky in love and never seemed to find that someone he yearned for. But there was more to him than that. He was kind and empathetic when one of his friends was worried or sorrowful. He was intelligent and had a wonderful sense of humor and often made his friends laugh. And more than once, she had seen Charlie give up his seat to an elderly person or help someone who was having trouble with a door or making it to a convenient bench. But for all his friends and good humor, Gemma often saw sadness and loneliness in his eyes. She would often sit next to him on the bench. Once he came to the museum with a book on Coretti, and she felt her face grow warm when he read about her life and her affair with Coretti. She knew she was in a very different age than the Renaissance, but still feared he might think less of her because of the relationship with the painter. As if he had read her mind, she heard him whisper, "I'm in love with you, you know." Gemma was shocked, certain he was talking directly to her, but soon realized he was making a confession to the painting. After that day, she sat closer to him and sometimes placed her hand over his. She saw that he would get a wistful little smile when she touched him, and she realized she too was falling in love with the beautiful young man with the sad eyes. After that, she would talk to him as he sat, telling him of her life. No one could hear her, of course, but she fantasized that Charlie could, and then one day he would take her away from the museum and they would have a life together. The years passed and Charlie grew older, while Gemma did not. Such a concept was not foreign to her. As a ghost who had existed for over 500 years, she had seen many men and women grow old and die. Some she had cared for, but never as much as she did for Charlie. As he grew older, Charlie's visits to the museum grew less frequent. Sometimes he would come with a woman. Gemma tried not to be jealous and knew that as a ghost, she could offer him little in the way of companionship or physical pleasure. Gemma told herself pining for him was futile and tried to forget him, but he was deep in her heart, enmeshed in her soul. She would cry when the museum was empty, her spectral tears falling like motes of moonlight that faded to nothingness. Despite her pain, she was always happy to see him, and she knew some girlish part of her still hoped she was in some fairy tale that might come true. There were times when her painting was rotated out of exhibition. Charlie would still come and sit on their bench, but he did not whisper to her on those occasions, even though she sat with him, trying to communicate her love and yearning for him. When Coretti's masterpiece was once again on display, she was always pleased at the jubilation in Charlie. His eyes would become bright, his step lighter, and he smiled like a child. On one of these occasions, he waited until he was alone in the room. Then he whispered that he had something important to tell her. Gemma, sure that he was going to profess his undying love for her, leaned in close, catching his scent, his excitement. "I'm getting married," he told her, and her heart broke. Really, she should have seen it coming. Then it got worse. "I've taken a job in New York," he told the painting. He went on with the particulars of his new career, but she didn't hear any of it. She retreated into one of the rooms where restorations were performed. Usually the smells of fresh paint and other chemicals were a balm to her, but not today. It was 20 years before she saw Charlie again. Time might have moved more rapidly for her than the living. She was over 500 years old, after all. But days without Charlie and the sameness of her surroundings slowed the years to an agonizing crawl. When he returned, his face had new lines and his hair was going gray. And he wasn't alone. With him was a young woman of 18. Charlie showed her the painting and then told her how it had captured his heart. The young woman listened attentively and squeezed his arm. Charlie gestured to the painting. "This is my daughter. We named her Gemma, after you." Gemma was both flattered and filled with sorrow, for his wife had given him a child, something she herself could never have done. The years passed, Charlie and his family moved back to Los Angeles, and Gemma watched as he grew old. His hair went completely gray and began to thin, and the lines in his face multiplied and grew more pronounced. One day, he tearfully told the painting that his wife had passed away, and her heart ached for him. After his children moved away, Charlie came to the museum every day. He had become a wealthy patron and saw to it that Girl with a Bowl of Figs was always on exhibit. He still got that wistful little smile whenever she would touch him or talk to him, but he always directed his whispered remarks to the painting, not to the young woman beside him. Charlie had grown quite old the last time Gemma saw him. He was stooped and needed the aid of a cane to get around, and when he talked, his breathing was labored. It was clear his health was fading. Charlie walked up slowly to the painting and smiled ruefully. "Getting old, Gemma," he wheezed. "Still, not bad for a man in his 90s, wouldn't you say?" Some young men walked by and laughed, the old man talking to a painting. Charlie either didn't hear them or chose to ignore them. Gemma wished she could frighten them, or at least make them feel a chill like the ghosts in stories. She had to be content with the knowledge that one day they would be by someone many years their junior. Gemma went to Charlie and put her arms around him, laying her head on his shoulder. Charlie sighed with contentment. "Sometimes," he said, "I swear I can smell your perfume. Something like gardenias." "Silly old man." Gemma felt her eyes fill with tears. She knew the time was coming when she would be alone again and wished there was some way, any way, to free herself. But of course, there was nowhere else to go but a cemetery in a tiny Italian village far away. Sighing, Gemma left the work of Jackson Pollock and wandered the exhibits. She passed some large windows and paused to look out at Robert Irwin's primordial palm garden. Though she had seen the collection of palms, tree ferns, and cycads many times, they still held an otherworldly aspect for her. How long since she had listened to the wind through a tree or heard a bird sing? How long since she had felt the rain on her face, soaking her hair and her clothes, its scent clean and new? She longed to go outside, but was afraid that being that far from her remains might cause her to dissipate like bits of ash or melting snow. Those pitiful bits of hair may have freed her from a world of tombstones and crypts, but now they cruelly kept her prisoner in the museum. The doors to the museum were now open, and visitors bustled in. Usually Gemma liked the liveliness of the guests, but today such vitality and enthusiasm only underscored her feeling of dread. She retreated to a far corner of an Egyptian display, hiding behind a large sarcophagus, not because she was afraid of being seen, but because she did not want to see anyone. After 30 minutes, she began to feel very peculiar. It was similar to the feeling she had when her painting was being moved, and she felt compelled to accompany it. She wondered if the painting was being rotated out of exhibition again. Perhaps someone had purchased it. Was that possible? Curious, she returned to the wing where her painting hung. A young man sat on the bench. He was tall with an unruly mop of jet-black hair. His clothes had not been in fashion for 70 years. He looked up at her and smiled. "Hello," said Charlie. She stared at him, then ran to him. They embraced, and she could feel him, truly feel him. "You're more beautiful than my dreams," he told her. Gemma was flooded with emotions, happiness, confusion, perhaps even a little fear. Was this really happening? Was Charlie really young again and in her arms? Charlie smiled and touched her face tenderly, and her doubts melted away. "They could make a home here," and Charlie motioned toward the exit. "Are you ready to go?" There's so much of the world I want to show you. Gemma looked down, filled with sadness. I can't leave, Charlie. I must remain here or return to the church in Pozzuoli where I was buried. But you're here, thousands of miles from Italy. Only because Coretti used some of my hair in his brushes. Such remains allowed me to leave my bones behind, but I am bound to them. Charlie laughed, but it was without cruelty. Gemma, I was cremated and buried in the family plot in Georgia. She looked at him, not understanding. You are not bound to your remains, Gemma, just as I am not. Oh, I felt a compulsion to remain there, but something stronger allowed me to leave. My love for you. Gemma remembered that long ago she too had once thought it must be her love for Coretti that bound her to the painting, not the grave. A tiny spark of hope flickered in her heart. It seemed love is far more powerful than a bond than one's earthly remains. Charlie kissed her, and she felt a passion, a yearning she had not felt in over 500 years. Gemma smiled at him, and Charlie smiled back. They kissed again, unmindful of a tour group that passed through them. Together they walked to the exit, two happy young people in love, unnoticed by throngs of visitors. They passed through the glass doors and into the shining and beckoning world beyond.